Draft Sickos is live here on the No Ceilings NBA YouTube channel. We are also on your podcast player of choice. I'm Stephen Gillespie of Draft Sickos here on No Ceilings. Thank you all so much for coming and hanging out with me, you bunch of sickos. If you're watching live on YouTube, first off, thank you. Second off, you'll see that I'm flying solo. That's okay, though, because I missed you guys. This was a lot of fun for me just to kind of come back and see if I still have this whole podcasting thing down, especially by myself. It's kind of intimidating doing a show solo. Those of you have done any sort of podcasting, you know how kind of vulnerable it is. But I know that I'm amongst family, so what do I got to worry about? If you are tuning in, we have a very special show lined up for you today. I was most recently at the All-American JUCO Showcase held in the Greater Atlanta region. Now, I know that the basketball world right now is just swarming with thoughts and opinions of Summer League, of course. Like, why wouldn't you? And then there's also the EYBL crowd getting it already. You bunch of sickos, you're already getting into the next draft cycle. So why on earth am I here talking about JUCO? Well, one, I was invited to go and cover this event. First off, I just want to give a special shout out to the people who were so kind to invite me, allow me to be credentialed, come in and cover for No Ceilings. Thank you all so much for letting me come. I had an incredible time. I don't know about you guys, but I don't know a whole heck of a lot about JUCO basketball. I am going to be completely honest with you. You don't get a lot of this in the podcast world, at least the podcast that I listen to. If there's anything that I know about scouting, it's that I don't know everything. And I feel like that should be okay. I think that's a safe thing for us to announce. We don't know everything about scouting, but I'm never satisfied with my level of knowledge and what I know and what I don't know. My fandom is not, you know, satisfied with just being okay at everything. And one thing that I know about the basketball world at large, even those of you watching the Summer League right now, there are so many players in Summer League participating right now that contributed to some sort of JUCO school, some sort of JUCO event at some point in their careers. I mean, when I was looking at the list of players who have come through this event in particular, the All-American JUCO Showcase, I was blown away. Names like Chris Duarte, Keon Ellis. Those of you who know me know that I love Keon Ellis. He's come through this event. Duop Reith, Gary Payton II. Players who you've seen in the playoffs have come through the JUCO event. Now, we know this. I knew this, but I never watched these guys at JUCO. This was just something that I just didn't do. I'm a D1 snob, low major snob even. I'm a sicko snob, so to speak. And it's just, if I know that people go through JUCO and I know that players have experience in JUCO, why would I not check on these guys periodically throughout the year? So when I saw that this All-American Showcase was taking place July the 11th through 13th, the 11th was a check-in day, but the actual games were held over the weekend on the 12th and the 13th. I was like, I got to check this event out. I need to reach out to the director. So the people who put this event on, their names are Brad Winton and Scott Golden. I reached out to Brad, first name that I saw, reached out to him, a very nice gentleman. And I said, hey, Brad, I want to cover this event for No Ceilings. They were kind enough to even announce that I was going to be in attendance. That made me feel super cool. Like, hey, guys, we have Stephen Gillespie of No Ceilings coming to cover this event. Like, that's pretty dope. I'm definitely going to be there and check this out. So I drove up to the Greater Atlanta region. And the reason that I say the Greater Atlanta region is that this event is held in Ellenwood, Georgia, which is right outside Atlanta. You got to fly into the Atlanta airport. So you advertise it as Atlanta. I get it. But when I got to Ellenwood, I walk up to this gym. And guys, I'm telling you that this gym is luxurious. It's a high school gym. I believe the name of the high school is Morrow High School in Georgia. I walk up to this gym and it is a beautiful facility for especially not even just for high school, just in general. I've been to some lower end colleges. I'm not going to say the names. I ended up going into this. I've gone into some very low major gyms and I'm like, okay, this is a low major gym. I went to this high school gym and I was like, this is not a college gym. This isn't even a JUCO gym. This is a high school gym. Anyway, the facilities are beautiful. There's two courts there. There's a weight room. There's a walkabout at the top deck where you can walk into like balcony style seating. It was pretty incredible. So I walk in this gym on day one, and there's this players only meeting that's taking place. And obviously I'm not going into a players only meeting. I'm not there to play. I'm there to watch. And so I walk around and I end up meeting a few people. I introduce myself to Brad, who is running this whole event. Like, even though he's the director, he and Scott, they're running around all over the place. They're rubbing elbows. They're talking to coaches. They're talking to the players. They're giving people wristbands. There's so many different people that they're interacting with, but Brad was nice enough to give me some of his time. I interviewed him. He's a phenomenal guy. I met him, and then I met this other gentleman, Pete Quinn, who I featured in the article. By the way, if you don't have anything going on right now other than watching this, pull up another tab, look it up on your phone, some other secondary device, go over to No Ceilings NBA, and you Plus members will get access to this event. Now, these Plus articles allow us to continue to go and be able to report boots on the ground for all these events that we go to. So please consider subscribing and being a Plus member. But I talked to Pete Quinn, who I mentioned in my piece, and Pete and I, the whole first day, like this gentleman who has 20 years coaching all across college basketball, one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever spoke to about the way things work. Pete schooled me up on JUCO basketball. And now, for those of you who had the same perception I did, is that what's wrong with these players? Why are they participating in JUCO? Why are they not at least in a low major D1 school? Pete schooled me up. And with the way that college basketball works now, the way that there are extra years of eligibility, the portal, you know, teams like Auburn who have like a starting age of their players are like 24, 25 years old. A lot of high major schools now, with money being paid to these players, and it fuels the success and vice versa, the success and the amount of money that these schools spend on their rosters, they kind of coincide. These schools want developed players. They don't want these freshmen who they don't feel like can contribute right off the rip. So these freshmen who need a little bit more time, a little bit more developmental structure put in place around them, they're then relegated to mid and low majors. Now, sometimes these players have things going on in their lives, like some sort of family emergency. Maybe the academics weren't there and they're trying. And then maybe they come late to the game. There's a lot of players that I've interviewed and the rest of us at No Ceilings have interviewed that have had life events happen. They had a crazy late growth spurt. They played at a high school where, you know, they weren't featured heavily enough. It was a really small school. You know, pick your poison. Like, you can't put in one of the coaches that I spoke to here at the event actually told me that anyone who tries to put a JUCO player in a box is really just fooling themselves, and it's kind of an ignorant thing to do. So when I was talking to Pete and all these other people at the event, it really changed my perspective on JUCO players, that sometimes these dudes just, as Tyler Rucker at No Ceilings say, sometimes these guys just take time. It's not that they're criminals or they don't care about school or anything like that. You know, there's some players who are at this event who went to a four-year school and tried to play and then ended up coming back to JUCO. So these guys are coming from all different walks of life, all kinds of unique situations and stuff like that. So that cleared my head first off on what quality of basketball play am I about to watch, right? And so I'm going to go over to the chat. There's a few people who have come in here. Dirty Dancer, coming in here throwing shade. Y'all miss some Odiara. Yeah, sometimes people make mistakes. Dirty Dancer, we still love you. Hope you still love us. Norman Rad in the chat said, what's up? Oliver Clapp said, you end up getting a look at Caillou Treacher, picked up UMass, Sacramento State, and Bradley offers. Was also a part of the New Zealand team. Shout out to the Kiwis. That came fourth in the World Cup. Oliver, I promise you we're going to talk about my guy Treacher. I actually got a chance to speak to him, interview him. He's one of the featured, you know, quotable guys that are in my piece over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. So if you want to read about Treacher, we'll talk about this too a little bit later on in the show. But yes, I got to meet Treacher. Fantastic dude. Funny as all get out. Very good player. We'll talk about him in a second. Norman Rad said, every once in a while, there's a JUCO diamond in the rough. Absolutely, Norman, for sure. Dirty Dancer said, only JUCO I remember last year was Yaxwell. And we're talking about him potentially being a first-round guy next year. Look at him at Michigan, right? Norman Rad said JUCO Butler was a JUCO at one point, or Jimmy Butler was a JUCO at one point. Absolutely, Norman. And then Oliver said, let's go hard. Let's go hard to get recruited from New Zealand. That's what I'm talking about, Oliver. So anyway, I'm talking to all these people. I'm getting schooled up. My perspective has changed. And I ask specifically, please do not tell me who I need to watch for. Because I did some research coming in here. I kind of had a feeling who some of the top guys was. And let's face it, guys, this is an All-American showcase, right? Brad, who helps run this event, he's a former JUCO player himself. He's a college coach. He's a former players agent. He's been running this event since 2011. So if he's got guys who are going to be at this event, I'm going to trust that Brad, who also runs Elite Scouting, a recruiting service that he's done for a long time. This guy is plugged in. So if they're putting all these players together for me to watch, just for me to watch, of course, there's some college coaches and stuff like that. But there's a lot of guys that watch JUCO a lot more than me. They're putting the best of the best in this event together for us to watch. So I'm assuming that everybody in here is going to be pretty good. So I asked, like, hey, don't try to tell me who's the best, because there's some players that I looked at and I just assume, like, just from looking, like, okay, you're going to be good. And I was kind of let down by a couple. And then there's some that I'm like, okay, like, decent build, little, you know, we'll see what he can do. And they ended up popping. So day one, I'm watching. And these events are actually done pretty good. So anyone who's ever been to, you know, the Portsmouth Invitational, been to some high school events, some other college tournaments, you're used to these exhibition style tournaments that there's some games that are taking place. There's some games that are happening. These games are about 40 minutes long, two 20-minute halves with a five-minute halftime with a warm-up period. There's some transition and all that stuff, right? Not to get too crazy into the details, but there's these 40-minute games, and they're rolling. There's two courses having games happening at the same time. I believe there's 18 teams, right? And there's games happening cycling through both of these courts. So everyone's going to get an opportunity to watch these guys at least three times during the weekend. If you're selected to play into the top 20 games, we'll talk about those in a minute, then you get a fourth opportunity to showcase your abilities to the audience and coaches and things like that. So we're watching all these games take place, and I'm just blown away by the quality of play, guys. I'm here to tell you that, was there some rough basketball? Absolutely. You're going to get rough basketball in D1, in D2, in high school, even some NBA games, the G League, Summer League. Y'all are watching some rough basketball sometimes, depending on who's out there on the court. This is obviously no exception, but there is so much talent on day one. Day two, a lot of the same thing. You know, there's fewer games. The games are starting on day one at about 9:30. Guys, I'm sitting on cushionless bleachers for about 8 hours. So my rear end is tired, and that's including a 5-hour trip coming from South Georgia to essentially North Georgia. So my rear end is tired from this event. I'm not going to lie to you guys, but day two, the games start a little bit earlier, about 9 a.m. and they end a little earlier. So the last game on day two, which includes these top 20 games, ends at around, or starts at about 2:15. So the last game is at 3:00. I leave from there, go straight home. I'm getting home at around 9 p.m. Eastern time. And it's nonstop basketball. So I'm watching these guys. I'm hearing about the way that JUCO basketball needs to be reconsidered. And there's just so much about JUCO that I didn't know, you guys. Like, for instance, without an event like this, I spoke with Keenan McMiller, who is the head coach at Chabot College out in California. And he enlightened me to just some of the dynamics that these guys have to face whenever they're playing JUCO basketball. You know, there's a lack of travel. You're kind of playing within a region. These guys aren't flying. These guys aren't traveling super far. So without a showcase like this, and without guys like Brad and Scott just analyzing the different talent from across the nation and bringing them together in a central location, these guys are going to be limited to the players that they can play against and things like that. So it really just enlightened me and really helped me understand kind of what these players do throughout their regular season. So that was me just kind of explaining how JUCO works. If you can hear that, I'm sorry, you guys. My dog is going crazy in his food and water bowl right now, so excuse me. My dog Bruce is he is no slouch when it comes to eating and drinking. But these games are so good. And I'm going to break down some players. Of course, you know, I'm going to talk about my time at the event. I'm going to give a shout out to the people who helped me. But you sickos, you guys want some names, right? You guys want some names that you could expect to see play college basketball down the line. As Oliver Clapp in the chat had mentioned, some of these guys have been getting scholarship offers prior to this event, especially afterwards. There's like 200-300 college coaches at this event watching, and these guys are getting scholarship offers in real time as well. So day one standouts. So in my opinion, the best player from the first day is a guard named Elijah Duval. He's listed at 6'3". He's a 2026 JUCO, which means that after next season, you can expect to see this guy play D1 basketball, depending on where he wants to go and what he wants to do. These JUCO kids, they can only play 2 years of JUCO, and then they're off to these four-year colleges, right? He has a 3.0 GPA, by the way, for anybody who has like these preconceived notions about school and how it matters and stuff like that. I love the fact that in the programs, the GPAs were listed along with literally every other thing that you would want to know about these guys. You could also see how well they do in school. So Elijah Duval is a guy who, when I watched him, I had to break my brain from what I am so programmed to doing. My goodness, Bruce. I had to factory reset my brain from how I evaluate players, because Elijah being a 6'3" guard, I really had to break my brain away from looking at him as a NBA prospect and say, okay, would I trust a player like him to be a good college guard, get his foot in the door, really learn a system, and then maybe down the line become and develop, be good enough to make the NBA one day? That's where I had to do this whole different paradigm shift than what I'm normally used to doing, watching these seasoned D1 players. But Duval, for my money, he was the best player of the entire day. Even though he's a sub-6-foot guard, he really did a good job of kind of carving his way to do whatever he wanted to do. He could get to his spots anytime he wanted. He flashed a lot of really good athleticism. At one point, he dunked over this guy whose name was Wesley Rosa. He's a 7'2" big man. My perspective of him was that he was like the JUCO version of DeAndre Ayton. You looked at him and you're like, oh my gosh, like what a physical specimen this guy is. And Elijah Duval said, okay, I'm looking. I'm not scared. I'm going to dunk over the top of you. Anytime he wound up with the loose ball, whether that be a turnover, a bad pass, whatever the case may be, anytime he got the ball, Elijah was looking to press the break. And he showed off soft touch around the basket. He shot well from deep. He had very good control over the ball and play at different speeds as well. So everything you would want from a guard in college basketball, you were able to see from Elijah Duval. And I wouldn't be surprised if this guy continues to get multiple D1 schools competing for his services as he gets closer to being in college. Another guy that I was really impressed with was Ryan Hunt, who is a big man, 7 feet tall, another 2026 JUCO guy. Most of these guys are going to be 2026 guys, so I'm not going to say that anymore until I get to one notable exception who I'm pretty excited about. But Ryan is out of Eastern Arizona with a 4.0 GPA, like so super smart. And I'll tell you that there were so many athletic guys at the tournament. What made Ryan stand out, not that he's not athletic, but he plays with a lot of skill, a lot of finesse. If I had to elaborate on this and put this into perspective for like college fans, he feels like a very Richmond style big man, like one of these skilled guys that you're going to be comfortable having the offense flow through. He's going to be a guy that you can trust to run handoffs, make passes out of the post, and he showed a lot of touch around the basket. Very smart, savvy guy, dictated where he wanted to go by use of pristine footwork, very strong frame. Eastern Arizona is loaded. We're going to talk about another guy who played at Eastern Arizona. Like this team is a wagon. Like I could only imagine if I watched more JUCO basketball how dominant this guy was. And Oliver Clapp in the chat said shout out Australia for Ryan Hunt. One thing I'll have you guys know is that I gained so much respect for Ryan, not just because of how well he did playing ball that day. But because of the fact that, like Oliver in the chat said, Ryan Hunt is from Australia. He flew over 20 hours to Virginia for another JUCO event where they gathered like the top 48 players in JUCO basketball. A lot of these guys participated in that event. So Ryan flew from Australia to Virginia right after that event was over, came down to Georgia to play ball. And you would not have been able to tell just by watching him play that this guy essentially time traveled to be at this tournament. It was one of the most, he was one of the most fun players to watch. And he had so much mileage on his body. Guys, this next guy, Solomon Aminu, and I'm going to let you know that as we get to some of these other names, I just did not have the time today to look up the pronunciation. I know for a fact I'm going to butcher another guy's name. I feel pretty confident that I got Solomon Aminu right, but you'll see, just listen, you'll see. But Aminu is a forward slash big. He's about 6'8". He played at Midland College, which is in Texas. I've been told, I didn't fact check that. Feel free to do so and let me know if I'm wrong, with a 3.0 GPA. So the reason why I like Solomon Aminu and why I think you guys, if you check him out, will like him is that if you like guys like Obina Anichili-Killen or Enrique Freeman, I genuinely feel like Solomon Aminu could be that brand of a big man playing in college basketball. And those explanations should tell you exactly why, but I'll give you some recap from the event. He plays so much bigger than his size. When I saw that he was only 6'8", I'm like, this guy is just all over the place. He has such a hot motor on him, and he come down with every single rebound that was within arm's reach. I literally stopped writing down in my notebook every rebound that he came down with because I was afraid I was going to run out of ink. This dude literally competed for every rebound, rarely did not come away with it. He has some work to do to be a complete offensive player. I mean, you could expect that, right? But I was actually surprised with the fact that he wasn't just like a tip in and put back guy. Like, he showed a couple of up and under moves. He showed the ability to make a couple dribbles and make a play. But right off the rip, when this guy plays college basketball moving forward, like at a 4-year school, this guy is going to make a living setting screens, grabbing rebounds, pushing the break, diving on the floor, running the floor. Like, this guy literally just did not stop. And again, if you guys like Obina Anichili-Killen, Enrique Freeman, Tristan Inaruna, like that style of front court player in college basketball, I genuinely feel like Solomon Aminu could be that type of a big man in college basketball, to where he's like maybe a super senior, combine season comes around, we see him in a bigger light, and then all of a sudden he becomes so many people's crush coming out of combine season. All right, so I mentioned earlier that most of these guys are 2026 JUCO guys. Tamar Brown is a big man, 7 foot. He's a 2025 post grad, which basically means like he's the baby in this group of players, right? He played at Rock Top Academy, 2.5 GPA. And again, he's a bit of a unicorn post grad in a lot of ways. That's very apparent. He looks every bit of 7 feet. When you look at him, like just height wise, you're like, okay, this guy's a 7 footer, but he's pretty thin. And that's to be expected. You know, not everyone's going to come in rocked up. Not everyone's going to be like Wesley Rosa, who, again, I think, if you were building a big man in a lab, you would want him to look like Wesley Rosa at this event. But Tamar Brown, day one was his best performance. Day two, a little bit of another story. But there's some polish that needs to happen. But until I watched Ryan Hunt play, I thought Tamar Brown was going to be the best big man out of this group. And every roster had like a 6'10 to 7 foot big man who of decent quality. I thought Tamar Brown was the second best because just the way he ran the floor, the effort he gave, another guy who had a motor on him, blocked a lot of shots, didn't grab a lot of rebounds because he played alongside Solomon Aminu. I would venture to guess that if those two were on different teams, I probably would have saw Tamar rebound a little bit more. He showed some good hands, a good level of patience to get to the spots that he wanted. The athleticism flashed on both ends of the ball because of the putbacks, finishing dunks, and rejecting passes. And again, he probably would have rebounded better if it was not for Solomon Aminu being on his team. But there's a lot of potential. He looks like a good player. I can't wait to see where he goes. And kind of rumor has it, and this also giving you some further exposure to the inner machinations of the way JUCO works, is that from what I've been told, Tamar has received a lot of really good offers to play at some low and mid-major schools. there is like this thing now to where like if players are not getting the type of developmental run that they need, we could talk about, you know, sit a year, learn the system, learn the coach, yada, yada, yada. But the best way to learn basketball is by playing basketball. That's always been the case. And there are some guys who are now considering JUCO overtaking a lower mid-major offer in a rotation as opposed to just being the guy I'm playing. Because if you play JUCO basketball like Tamar Cann, you're going to play against some older guys too in JUCO, some guys who are a little bit older than you, and you're going to play against a lot of athletes as well. So there's some benefits, and Tamar could benefit from that. All right, so the next guy. You're going to hear me talk about him a couple more times as I get through day one, day two, and then the top 20 game. Noah Mendy is a wing, 6'6", listed out of Daytona State, 3.5 GPA. This brother is good, man. Like, he is so good at basketball. He is a mouthpiece in the chat, says, what's goody? I don't know if you're asking me what a goody is or if that's like a cool way of asking what's good. I'm going to assume you're saying what's good. What's up, mouthpiece? How you doing? Noah Mendy is a very good basketball player in a lot of ways, like a lot of obvious ways. He is your prototypical run jump athlete, a little bit thin, played with the long sleeve t-shirt on. I get that that might not be for everybody. I get it. Beyond that, he is a very fluid athlete, covers a ton of ground in such a short amount of time. Again, prototypical run jump athlete. Beyond some of the physical advantages that he has in terms of verticality, speed, ground coverage, fluidity, just moves like a really high level basketball player. Beyond all that, he played with a high level of intensity. He rattled off a couple of threes early on in the first game from real range. And if you're wondering, is this guy too cool to do all the dirty work? Like, I could assure you that he is not too cool. Like, he was scrapping for rebounds. He's scrapping for loose balls. He's competing for offensive and defensive rebounds. He made the right pass regularly, something that, if I'm being honest, you know, if I'm going to say all the good stuff, I got to call out some of the bad. So many players could not look beyond their own nose in terms of scoring. And it was refreshing to see Noah Mendy not just hunt for an assist, but make a nice connective pass, like keep the offense flowing. It was so refreshing to see Noah do that. And again, he balanced these connective passes while also on occasion throwing down a one-handed lob finish, right? And that satisfied all you guys remember. You all will remember, right? The debate that happens between the basketball player and the hooper, right? Like, the Venn diagram intersected and you got Noah Mendy in this tournament, right? We'll continue. There's a couple of guys who I'm going to mention for day one before I get to day two. Christian McElveen, who's a guard wing, listed at 6'5", from Redlands Community College, 2.7 GPA. In a lot of ways, he was very similar to Noah Mendy. He was just a ton of fun to watch on that first day. After Mendy himself threw down a lob dunk, McElveen threw down a dunk of his own. And then after that, another dunk of his own. Showed off some great range from his jumper, was consistent from deep for the rest of the game. His athleticism also showed on the defensive end. He forced several events, whether it would be a block, whether that be a steal, that allowed he and his team to push to break. Even when he didn't have the ball in his hands, this is something, again, if I'm going to say all the good stuff, I got to say some of the bad stuff. Not all of the players that I watched did anything away from the ball when they didn't have the ball in their hands. Not all of them did, right? And if you wanted to kind of assume who it was, you can look and see who got scholarship offers during this time and who didn't. McElveen moved really well without the ball, made some real heady cuts to the rim where his teammates found him for finishes. Again, another player who could stand to gain a little bit of weight, but he wasn't afraid to attack anybody who was on the floor either. All right, so the last guy, this is going to be, you guys remember, I said that there's going to be a name that I butchered. And again, I wholeheartedly apologize that I'm about to get this wrong. But please look him up. I'll even spell it. I'm not going to spell a lot of things on the show, but I will spell this guy's name because he might be my favorite player coming out of this event. King Fang Pang. That's Q-I-N-G-F-A-N-G space P-A-N-G. King Fang Pang, forward big man out of Monroe University, listed at 6'8" with a 3.2 GPA. might be my favorite player that I watched over the weekend. And I was able to see him on day one twice, which was a real treat. It was awesome to watch Peng because, for reasons that you might assume, there were a lot of players who hadn't played against Peng and looked at him and thought, I'm going to body this guy up. I'm going to size this guy up. Peng sent so many shots backwards, so many shots in reverse. One of the most fun defensive players that I watched throughout the entire weekend was King Fang Peng. There were several, and one of those guys who's Zach Chambers on a team that he played against, we're not going to talk about him much, but Zach Chambers, who was listed at 6'9", regularly looked to bully Peng and just couldn't do it. As the game continued, Peng would score regularly, really started feeling himself. He's one of these guys to where you'd never have to guess how this guy's feeling. If he is feeling himself, he's bobbing his head, he's smiling, he's doing the Jalen Brunson hand over his mouth 3-point celebration. He is hyping up his teammates. Like he's a performer. He was great playing the game of basketball, and he knew that there were people watching him play basketball live, and he was really feeling himself. But while there was no short of confidence in him, the second, I will tell you that like his effort in the second game kind of started falling off. And I don't think it was because he didn't care, but I think he was the only one playing defense. There were times where my man had to rotate on three different guys on his side of the floor while there were four other teammates on the other side. And he was just like, I don't know what you guys want me to keep doing this for or whatever. But he did show that he could shoot. There were a lot of times where he demonstrated good touch around the rim. He made some threes. He blocked shots. He rebounded. I could really see college teams becoming more interested in him. So we'll move on now to day two. If you'll excuse me, I'm doing a lot of talking. I'm going to take a quick swig of water. All right. So moving on to day two. Now, I was curious to see who was going to stand out in day two. Now, I'm going to read a few names that I really, really liked at this event who stood out in day two, who I could have wrote about on day one. First, like I'm just not going to do a lot of honorable mentions for the JUCO event. I'm not going to make 12 guys out of a collective group that we had here on day one. I wanted to leave some space for day two, because sometimes if you've been at events like this where there's these exhibition style games, someone stands out one day, you're like, can you show me again? Or I started hearing buzz while I was in attendance about this guy's good, this guy's got this offer, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, okay, like calm down. Like I could kind of see it, but let's wait. So day two, and I'm going to call up this comment that was in the chat earlier. Hang on, let me scroll up. And here we go. So Oliver Clapp said, you end up getting a good look at Caillou Treacher, who UMass, Sacramento State, and Bradley have all offered him. And again, New Zealand team in the World Cup, team did really well, and he was a big reason behind that. I did. And I talked to him coming in the second day because over at NoCeilingsNBA.com, I wanted to make sure that I got an adequate representation of what a player's mindset is coming into these types of games. I wanted to get a good representation of that, right? So as I'm getting this representation of what these games are like for players, I talked to Caillou, very down-to-earth guy, very funny, very full of energy. Wants to have a good time, loves his new teammates, loves the coaches in attendance. He's just a very fun guy, very Kiwi feeling guy, right? Come day two, after I got to talk to him, I would like to take some credit for his performance, because this dude was just like dynamite for day two. And again, I could have wrote about him day one, watch him run the floor, look at him in his eyes. You're like, I get it. I can see why people would like him. Day two, he dominated. Early on in the game, he, went to like this post hook move that accentuated his soft touch, his footwork, things like that. And while you assume at that moment that Caillou is just kind of a post machine, if you will, he's spread his game out beyond deep, very fluid 3-point shot that looked really, really nice. I was very pleased to see that. And then I'm like, okay, this is like an offensively tilted kind of forward who can do a little bit. Rebounding and things like that. Nope. There was a lot of defensive possessions that really popped to me come day two, to include like this LeBron James style chase down block that he had in transition. So this guy just shows high levels of energy on both ends of the floor. He's rebounding. He's setting good screens. He just did so much that the buzz that I was starting to hear about him on day one, I'm like, okay, I get it. This makes a lot of sense. So he really stood out. Clarence Paye is the next guy I want to talk about. Now, he really stood out. He's a wing forward listed at about 6 foot six, played at Angelina College, 3.2 GPA. Much like Treacher, like I said, I could have wrote about this dude on the first day. In fact, I would tell you that after the first day, I was higher on Clarence than I was on Caillou. I was actually shocked to read that he was only listed at 6 foot six because he's like very physically fit. He's like one of these broader dudes, and you didn't always see that with some of these players, a much broader player than some of these guys. He just played bigger, right? Very physical guy. He started the game by snatching up some rebounds on both ends of the floor. Not that his box out technique was necessarily sloppy. Clarence could just sky up over players around him and come down with the ball. So that was a lot of fun to see. He's scrapping. He's doing all these like attacking moves. The ball's in his hand. He's driving. He's getting to his spots. He's getting physical. He's not being deterred from shooting and scoring, things like that. He was able to go up against different kinds of defenders. You know, the other team was giving him multiple different types of looks, whether that be slower, whether that be bigger. Clarence is just kind of doing his business the whole game. And when he's not doing that, he's playing a winning brand of basketball, similar to what I mentioned to that earlier of Noah Mendy. I kept wanting to say Noah Penda, if you could imagine from this past draft cycle, Noah Mendy. Clarence was one of these guys that would just make the right play. Like, that, for instance, there was a play where he would drive, engage multiple defenders, and just kick the ball out on to guys open in the corner. And Paye continued to show that he could be a reliable three-point shooter too. Day one, he was a good three-point shooter. Day two, he was also on there. Let's keep rolling with these breakdowns here. Best name, maybe, other than King Pang Fang, Jamal Fatty, wing forward, spelled Phatty. Very fun name. Listed at 6 foot eight, played at the College of Sequoias with a 3.2 GPA. Again, I said this a few times. Fatty is one of these guys who, much like in day one, I could have wrote about him. I really liked him. I saved him for day two. I'm so glad that he showed up the way that he did. He's like an aesthetically pleasing run-jump athlete, much like Noah Mendy, who we were talking about. Or Mendy. Wow, you hear me? I'm mixing up Mendy or Penda and Mendy into Mendy now. That's where I'm at now. Come on, brain. But much like Noah Mendy, Jamal is good in a bunch of obvious ways. He's aesthetically pleasing to watch run the floor, but he also has like a nice degree of polish. I couldn't believe at a lot of points throughout the game that him and Paye were on the same team, because these dudes just like overwhelmed any team that they were lined up against. While Paye was doing like a lot of the grunt work that I mentioned earlier, Fatty is just cashing in threes. He's driving and dishing. He's slamming the ball down, throwing down thunderous dunks. His handle was awesome, and he rarely ever made a mistake when he put the ball down on the floor. Of course, you know, when you can sky up for some silly alley-oops like he can, you could be a little bit more, my dribble is optional, as opposed to some of these other guys that were at the event. Super aggressive on defense, could rise up from weak side and just throw the ball into the bleachers. Would also be very willing to sit down in his stance and play some hellacious defense as well. So next, I've talked about some big men. I'm going to talk about another one now. Matt Mbale, big man, 6 foot 11 at South Georgia Tech. So pretty much in my backyard, 2.9 GPA. I'm going to start off by saying, when I'm talking about Matt here, that I was really surprised with the quality of big men that I saw at this event, because I've watched D1 mid majors, low majors. I've watched G League big men, and I'm like, okay, if these guys are in JUCO, there's probably going to be only like two big men that are like, okay, maybe one good, maybe two okay, and then the rest aren't going to be that great. And Bully is going to keep this line of big men that I've been listing going. Day one was just okay, but he was fired up in the second game. He made his presence very well known defensively, moving his feet well, communicating, blocking several shot attempts. He was all over the boards, similar to Aminu. I just stopped writing when he was getting rebounds. I like to do little notes while I'm watching, and I want to say, like, okay, this player was doing this well, and I'm going to track little statistical things. I just stopped with Mbolley because I'm like, you're just going to get him. I understand. I get it, Matt. You're going to grab rebounds. I understand. All right. There wasn't a ton of offense ran for him, but he showed great effort on tip-ins and putbacks, setting a lot of screens, paved out some really wide driving lanes for his teammates. So it was just really impressive to see a big man willing to do a lot of the dirty big man things that not a lot of other guys were wanting to do. All right, I'm going to hit another water break real quick. Guys, just hang on. Bear with me. All right, I needed that water break because I got to give my love again, Solomon Aminu. My guy just was so much fun to watch day two. He was just fantastic. So I'm going to let you guys know, I didn't disagree with a lot of decisions that were made by the fine folks at the showcase. They're very smart people. They've seen these guys way more than me. I was blown away that Solomon Aminu was not a part of the top 20 games. And I'm sure that there's a very good reason for that. I didn't ask. I probably could have got that information if I tried a little bit harder, but I'm sure there was a logical reason. But I'm also a fan of basketball, so I'm going to have an illogical rant every once in a while. I really wanted to see Solomon Aminu compete in that, and I was a little bit let down, but it was okay. There was still a lot of really good basketball. Much like Solomon did the previous day, he just did so much to help his team. As you can imagine, he's rebounding. He's attacking the glass. Best player that I saw a rebound across all the games that I watched easily. He's doing putbacks. There were times where now he's setting screens. He's getting the ball in the short roll and he's delivering passes out into the corner. Again, not a lot of guys willing to do that at this tournament, but Solomon, while he's also grabbing rebounds and diving on the floor and just yelling at everybody within earshot, he's also setting these nice short roll playmaking decisions as well. He's demonstrating some of that you just didn't see very much in this tournament. So that blew me away. I really appreciated how much he did in open space on both sides of the floor on day two, whether that be, okay, I'm going to be willing to take a three, I'm going to be willing to make a pass along the perimeter on the offensive end. And then defensively, I'm going to block a shot on a closeout. I'm going to switch out onto a smaller guy and defend him in space and make him pass the ball. I just really loved what I saw across both days to him. And I wanted to give him another special shout out. All right, so that's going to lead me now to the last segment of games that I'm going to talk about, the top 20 games. I want to start off by saying that when I spoke to Brad and I interviewed him, again, over at NoCeilingsNBA.com, you can read this on the piece. It's going to be there. I asked Brad, what's the reason behind having these top 20 games? And the name might be a little misleading because there's four teams with 10 players on them. So that's 40 players, right? But there's two games in total happening between these four teams. But these guys are only competing one time. So if you can imagine, there's like team one playing against team two, and then team three against team four, and then we're done, right? Like the winners don't play against each other. The losers don't play against each other. There's just these two exhibition style games against the 40 best players in there. But we call it the top 20 game. So when I'm asking Brad about this top 20 game and its purpose behind it, because I don't see this in a lot of other places. Like, you will go to Portsmouth and all these great players are infused on these different teams. And as teams lose, like, you're just going to see less of them. No matter if the best player of the tournament is on the losing team, you just might not see the best player of that tournament like you do, say, like the fourth best player if their team just keeps winning, right? This concept really fascinated me. So I asked Brad about this, and he told me that this is just another opportunity for these players to condense the field, shrink the player pool, the collection of talent, and see these guys against even higher levels of competition within the same group of players that they've played against, guys that they have never played with before, guys that they've never played against before. Just another opportunity for them to get out there, demonstrate their ability in front of, you know, hundreds, upwards of 300 to 400 college coaches in attendance, right? And so having these games allows more coaches to come over after the first day. Again, you're playing in the greater Atlanta region. So there are some teams that are going to have some special access to these games being played just because of proximity. But there might be other teams coming in throughout the day. And there was, even when I was talking to Brad, there's more teams coming into this event just watching, even if they're just popping their head in just to see. Maybe some assistants are in attendance for some schools, and then the head coaches come in on day two. Maybe the assistants are telling the head coach, like, day one, like, hey, this guy is really dominating. You really need to come in and check this player out. These games give the head coaches the ability to come in to see the best of the best of this group play against each other and say, yep, I agree with your assessment, assistant coach, good job. Or, okay, let's go to the airport. You know, something along those lines could be happening. And then also, this is just, it's higher levels of competition. It's more exposure. Teams get to see against each other. It's just, it's a cool event. And I really appreciated that aspect. And so in the chat, Norman Rad, again, shout out to everybody who's taken some time on a Tuesday evening in the middle of summer league to come listen about a podcast about JUCO basketball. You guys are real sickos. You guys are here for it. And I love you all. But Norman Rad said, who is the best long-term prospect of this group? Norin, I am so glad you asked. Probably my favorite question that I've read in the past 30 seconds. The player who, the way that I broke this down, and again, over at No Ceilings, you can read this. The player who stood out to me in this top 20 game is a guy who I mentioned I loved across both the days. And I really wanted this selection to be essentially the MVP of the tournament because I trusted my evaluations of these guys. I said, okay, these are who I thought the best players were. And there were some that I liked that weren't in there. Oh, and to go back to the conversation with Brad, this is a good point to bring up. Brad mentioned, you know, because I asked them, how are these teams constructed? And I thought that that was a good question. That's why I asked it. I said, how are these teams constructed? How do you come up with, of all these players, who makes it in? And Brad told me that he and Scott, they're so busy that he allows their staff to have a lot of say. The day before the second day, so the end of day one, I guess is the best way I could phrase that. At the end of day one, these guys are all getting together. I imagine they're at this huge table. They got all these graphs and charts and bits of data. They're talking about, well, this player has this many teams here to see them, or this guy has an offer on the table, and we really want this school to see him. They take all this information together, but it's based on that tournament. It's not their assessment and grades over these guys throughout the year. This is heavily weighted for how they have gone across both days and said, these are the guys that we're looking at for these teams. Okay. This is a combine to the combine. This is like a combine to the combine to the pit. Sort of Dirty Dancer. Yeah. In a lot of ways. That's a really good way to put that. For those who aren't watching live or over YouTube, first off, shame on you. Still love you, but shame on you. But if you're listening on audio, Dirty Dancer said, this is like a combine to the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Yeah, in a lot of ways, Dirty Dancer, that is a really apt way to put that. But these teams are put together. The staff has a lot of say to who makes this, and they want to make a roster too. Like, that might be why Solomon Aminu didn't make it, because he's a big man, and they already had a handful of big men that had scholarship offers, teams asking to see these other big men. Whatever the case may be, they can't just have 30 big men out there out of the 40 players. Like, you just can't play basketball. Maybe you can, I don't know, but they decided to not play basketball that way for this. So anyway, back to what I was saying earlier. When Norin Rad in the chat asked, who is the best long-term prospect of this group? The last guy who I wrote about at the end of my top 20 game breakdown piece over at NoCeilingsNBA.com, I essentially wanted that to be my MVP of the tournament, the guy who I valued the most. Let me grab a drink of water real quick, guys. Hang on. Your boy's thirsty. I really wanted this selection to be the MVP of the tournament, in my opinion. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you guys, I went with Noah Mendy. I think that this guy, again, played at Daytona State. And when I'm talking to people at this tournament, I'm asking, like, what schools are good? Like, which JUCOs, like, where are these JUCO powerhouses located? One of the states that I hear all the time is Florida, which is just right across, right across the street from me, essentially. Noah Mendy plays at Florida. He's in a state where he's constantly getting more challenged, I would say, than some, you know, I'm speaking very surface level, but just bear with me for those of you JUCO truthers out there. Noah is going against some of the best competition that he can go through throughout the year. Then he's grouped up with these guys where he hasn't spent a lot of time playing with or against them. And he just stood out literally every single game. I'll let you know what I wrote about him for the top 20 portion. I said, narrowing down to one player is tough, but I'm going to give the nod to Mendy. Everything you could want from a player at his position, you could see that from Mendy on both days and in every game that I saw him. His team was incredibly deep. And when I'm looking at the way that these rosters were organized based on my personal evaluations, I thought Mendy's team was probably going to run with, you know, run and get some victory in their matchup on there. But I was curious to see how the construct of this team would dictate who the man is on this team. And clearly the rest of his team agreed with me that Mendy's the guy. Whenever there was a time that this team needed a bucket, they got it to Mendy. But he wasn't just he's not a chucker. Like, he is very smart. He will let the offense flow. He's going to facilitate and do well for other people. There's this other guy on their team. I forget his first name. Forgive me. I don't have my notes around, but his last name is Lacey. He was listed at 5'8". Mendy was kind of doing this like two-man game with Lacey that was so much fun to watch along their perimeter. And when there was a shot that needed to be had, Mendy was the guy that the team trusted. There were several instances of selfish basketball throughout the tournament, but Mendy did all of his work throughout the natural flow, the natural order of the offense. He opened up the game by getting a steal, and then he grabbed an offensive rebound and kicked the ball out to a teammate for a three-pointer. I believe that was to Lacey. Please don't quote me on that, though. His first points came via a dunk, which he got just by running the floor, just by running hard, playing hard basketball, you know, giving great effort. He was able to get a dunk. And then he, you know, he would go on to record several steals and grab a few blocks throughout the rest of this game and continue to show off this reliable three-point shot. I believe he hit like three or four threes in this next game. This effortless leaping ability that he had and this all-day stamina led to several feats of just impressive transition play, including another sick lob finish. Among all the talent that I saw across both days, like, I feel bad for the people who had to sit next to me and endure my self-conversations, and I'm just shaking my head, laughing, writing in my composition notebook as like, man, Mendy is so daggum good. Mendy is so bleeping good. He is just so good watching him play basketball. So, Noren in the chat, who is the best long-term prospect of this group? For my money, Noren, for my very surface-level JUCO basketball scouting at this event, I would have to say Noah Mendy was the best player, in my opinion. Now, there were other great players. Some, like Hackett was another guy who I watched in this group. Again, forgot the first name. I didn't have it wrote down. I'm kind of freestyling a little bit here. But Hackett was a guy out of this group that really stood out well to me among this group. But, guys, I just want to thank you all. I'm watching the numbers that are listening to me on a solo show about JUCO basketball in the middle of the summer, and I am just blown away, guys. I shouldn't be, because I know that I'm dealing with a bunch of basketball sickos out there, but I'm just blown away by the number of people who are coming in and tuning in. So thank you all so much. As I'm wrapping up, if you want to throw a quick couple questions in the chat, you can. Would love to answer them. But as I'm wrapping up, I just want to remind you guys that just because the draft cycle, quote unquote, is over, like, we are still putting out content over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Tyler Rucker just put out a fantastic summer league like preview of who to watch for on each team. I still feel like that piece is still really relevant, because a lot of the guys that he shouted out are doing everything that he said that they were going to do in the piece. And it's almost like a living, breathing document at this point, guys. Rowan dropped his Ouija Wanderings, which was such a fantastic read, where this guy is just talking about his favorite freshman that he's watching so far, because this guy is another sicko just grinding film watching. He's talking about some of his favorite returner players, like some of the favorite low major and mid major guys that he's excited about watching. So that's available. My guy, my co-host, Maxwell Baumbach, is probably, as we speak right now, doing interviews, writing pieces for his No Stone Unturned piece that is like critically acclaimed. I believe that he got an Emmy or an Oscar or a Grammy or what, some other article, I forget, like what are they called, like the Indies awards that they hand out. That piece is always well received. It's always heavily anticipated. I know some of the names that Maxwell is cooking up on right now. You guys are going to be so blown away. It's probably going to be his best year yet. I have conducted several player interviews already of guys that I am anticipating taking good leaps maybe this year or next. And I have about 3 player interviews done, and I'm excited to share those with y'all. Some of you sicko fans out there will appreciate some of those names. Norman Rad said, "The end of a draft cycle is the beginning of a new draft cycle. True words have never been spoken." And then Dirty Dancer in the chat said, "Knicks actually have picks this year. Of course, I'm still here." Yes, absolutely. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for me. Please, if you're watching, listening, please hit a thumbs up while you're here. If you're not subscribed and you're listening, please subscribe. We love you all. Everything that you do for the channel here on YouTube does so much to help us reach more of our audience. If you're listening on a podcast player, please, please hit us with a 5-star review, share this with your friends, and go over to NoCeilingsNBA.com and subscribe. I promise you, we are not done putting out great content. Stay tuned, guys, and we will hit y'all with some more great content, and we will catch up to y'all next time. Noren, I see you. I'm not going to forget you. Thanks and laters. Later, Tater. Oliver Clapp said, but thank you for talking about JUCO. Dude, I am becoming... I probably was the biggest basketball deviant in media space over those 48 hours. Everybody's talking about Summer League. Everybody's talking about EYBL. But who is out there giving you guys JUCO coverage in the middle of the summer, in between draft cycles? Your boy Stephen G. Hoops on Twitter or X, wherever you want to follow me. But that's going to do it for us here at No Ceilings. We will catch y'all next time. Much love, everybody.